You're listening to a 95BFM podcast. Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labour MP Andrew Little.
It certainly is time for our chat with Labour MP Andrew Little. Being nice little sort of sniff there.
They didn't know it was me. It could have been you.
Well, certainly wasn't it is winter.
Could have been
colds
Andrew
are going
Little
around.
For we know.
Well, it could have been.
Yeah. Maybe he's in studio with
us. He occasionally coughs during our interviews. Anyway. I spoke with Labour Minister Andrew Little. No, I'm not very good at doing that. This week about overlapping treaty claims and the recent Supreme Court decision around Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei's claim to first right of refusal. We also spoke about the potential reform of the Official Information Act and the Ministry of Justice workers taking strike action yesterday, which I think is a good thing. You know, industrial action, power to the people. Anyway, let's hear from Andrew. Here he is.
The Supreme Court has overturned the Court of Appeal's decision to not let Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei argue its claims on 9 properties in Auckland. Will this cause you to reconsider the Maru Tuahu collective settlement?
No, and I think the Supreme Court was pretty clear that although they said, look, there was something to the claims that Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei were making to the court, not all of the claims they were making could be argued, and so 2 of the 5 items were struck out. Of the remaining 3, they said considerable work needed to be done to narrow the scope to something that the court could consider, what in legal terms they call justiciable. really what I took from the judgment is that, and I understood Ngāremi Blair, one of the rangatira of Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei, saying is maybe this is a reason to get around the table and talk about the issues as opposed to more litigation. And if that happens, that's great. Really the issue comes down to for Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei is whether the rights they have under their settlement legislation are exclusive to Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei or whether other iwi can claim some rights of different levels in their rohe. That's not an issue that's specific to Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei. Other iwi have it, but the question is, you know, whether the Crown has ever agreed to exclusive rights to any iwi. But no, we're better to talk about these things rather than litigate them. And I think whether it's Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei and Maru Tuahu or Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei and Maru Tuahu and the Crown, either way, there needs to be a good discussion about it.
Because they say they were granted first right of refusal to Crown-owned properties in their 2012 settlement. Why hasn't this been upheld?
Well, they were granted a number of rights within their rohe, within the area of interest. But the question is whether that was exclusive. That is to say, whether or not by reaching agreement with Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei, whether that prevented the Crown from offering Crown land to other iwi who also have a stake in that area. The problem with Tamaki Makaurau is there are a lot of iwi who have various interests and a stake in various parts of Tamaki Makaurau. And so the question is whether any agreement or any offer is ever exclusive. That's really the question. It arises in a number of other cases. But in the end, these things, because of the nature of Māori settlement and particularly post-colonial actions, whether, you know, other iwi can claim rights and interests, that's better dealt with through a tikanga process and or discussion with the Crown. So that's, you know, we'll see where things go. Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei have to make a decision about what they do next. Do they go back to the High Court or do they explore a resolution through discussion?
And Chief Justice Sean Elias criticised the lower courts for placing too much emphasis on potential legislation that, if passed, could have decided the ownership of the properties. Was Parliament trying to sort of interfere in the court's decision here?
I think the other way around, actually. I think there's been historical kind of, how might we say, sort of jostling and pushing and shoving between the courts and Parliament about where their respective kind of jurisdictions begin and end. There's a long-standing principle that the courts don't interfere, not just with the right of Parliament to legislate, but actually the right of ministers to take whatever matter they want to Parliament as a matter of legislation. I think probably Dame Shane Elias errs on the side of inserting the court more into restrain the parliament than perhaps has traditionally been the case, and that many other kind of judges would allow. It's interesting, she was a minority of one in this bench on the Ngāti Whātua case, whereas four other judges decided actually, you know, ministers can actually or do have the right to decide what they take to parliament by way of legislation.
I mean, if it went to the High Court and they did find that Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei had the ownership rights of the land, would you just override this with legislation?
That's why I think it's better to actually have a discussion about these things. There are parts of New Zealand where there are competing rights and interests between different iwi. They are notoriously difficult to resolve. We've seen that in other cases. We saw it with Tauranga Moana and Hauraki iwi early this year. In the end, these things only get resolved when people talk with each other, and there's a lot of calls go up for tikanga processes, and I think that's right. I think the iwi chairs forum made an interesting submission to me a few months ago, which is about, you know, in terms of dealing with overlapping claims between iwi, is that it's better to get the discussions going well before signatures are put on pieces of paper, and obviously that happens well before you get good legislation. So better to resolve these things earlier in the process than is currently happening. You know, I tend to agree with that, and I've asked officials to go away and have a close look about the way we deal with these issues of competing claims over those same pieces of land.
And moving on, you've said you might be reviewing or changing departmental procedures of the Official Information Act, despite it not being an original sort of government priority. Why the change?
No, we've always said that. I think that what was put to me earlier in the year is, are you going to reform or review the Official Information Act? The first port of call is not to look at the legislation. It is to look at the practices and see whether the most common complaints about disclosure of information under the Official Information Act, which is usually, you know, lengthy delay, undue redactions, you know, waiting for people to have to appeal to the Ombudsman, all those sorts of things, whether that can be dealt with through better guidelines and better kind of internal rules, or whether a change to legislation is needed. Since then, as we've developed our open government policy, an in-principle decision we've made is that we want to get to the position of proactive release and not waiting for a request, and that may necessitate some look at the legislation so that the same protections that apply to information disclosed as a result of a request also apply to information that's disclosed proactively. So we are looking at it, but we're still looking at practices and procedures. That's the first kind of order of priority, and that's what we're in the process of doing.
Are you worried that people don't see the government as transparent as it could be, especially considering the recent, I suppose, debacle with Claire Curran?
I think if that's given an impression that we're not serious about greater transparency and greater openness, and actually following the spirit of the Official Information Act rather than the black letter law, you know, that would be disappointing. I think, you know, 1 year on, we're still early in the life of this government, and we've got a lot to get right and to put right, and we'll continue to do that. So, I think we've made a commitment about greater openness. We will do that, and, you know, with Chris Hipkins, who's now the minister who's taken up responsibility for this, we'll get that work underway with a vengeance.
And finally, Ministry of Justice workers went on strike yesterday for a few hours. Do you support their calls for more pay?
Under the State Sector Act and indeed under the Cabinet Manual, ministers are not meant to interfere in employment relations or matters to do with employees. So I'm not going to do that except to say, look, they've got their inherent right to withdraw their labour, to take strike action. You know, I've lived a professional life of supporting and encouraging that. In the end, you know, they've got a cause to argue, which is they want, you know, better paying conditions, they want pay equity for those who are being unfairly paid because of discrimination. And I think, like a lot of workers, state sector workers as well as private sector workers, they want a long-term commitment about improving the conditions of work and the enjoyment of work and what have you. And I think it's just a question of the ministry and its management and leadership and the representatives of the Ministry of Justice workers to find a way where they can map out a path to the future that delivers all.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.